Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Okay, say ass.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 9, Episode 11, Marathon. And now your hosts are Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
Two things before we begin. As always, you can purchase an ad on this podcast. Go to previously.com/ads for more information. $100 for a commercial message, $50 for a personal message. But also, I was reminded when we got a message on our Facebook page today that people may not know we do another podcast together. Go to find us at Extra Hot Great. It's a general TV podcast. We do it every week. Dave is on that as well. We have a fourth and sometimes fifth guest. As you're listening to this, our most recent episode is about Magnum PI reboot and original. So check that out. If you like us here, you may like us there as well.
It's true.
All right. Speaking of liking, here's the opposite with our C plot. Steve AIDS benefit dance marathon stuff. Okay, so there's going to be a dance marathon to raise money for AIDS research. Fine. It's going to be at the club. Where else? This storyline weaves through the whole episode, and the parameters of exactly how this thing works are completely bananas. Like, it just is. No part of this makes sense as a fundraiser, right? Is it just me?
I guess. I mean, I think it's supposed to be like you like the old school, like a Walk for Heart Health thing where you had a little sign up sheet and you got pledges per mile or per hour or per minutes jump roped or whatever the hell it was.
Yeah.
So it's like per hour of dancing. But then it seems like if you don't do the whole 12 hours or 24 hours or however the fuck long it is, they like none of the donations are valid.
I seriously don't know.
I really don't know either. And I just kept thinking of They Shoot Horses, Don't They? Which, of course, is the gig young Jane Fonda movie about. And these were things in the Depression. Mm-hmm. This was how like some people got grocery money. That movie is grim for a number of reasons. And I just was like, don't step to this minor classic of auteur cinema.
Yeah.
Brian Setzer.
Well, yeah. I mean, we'll get to the other specifics of why this is nonsensical as they come up. But for now, despite all of her bullshit in the last episode, Kelly tells us she's going with Matt. And we hear that in clip, Dave, 4.
I thought Matt took dance lessons.
He did. Now he only steps on my toes every other minute.
Sarah.
Shut up, bitch. Like, you don't. I mean, she doesn't like anyone. Like, she hates everyone she's with, sometimes because they're legitimately hateful. But at this point in the series run, because Kelly is just a bitch about it mm-hmm. being life on Earth.
Yeah.
And it's like, why are you like, aren't you supposed to be in that, like, still googly about each other phase where that kind of thing is cute? Like, she sounds like he's like physically pooping on her. I just don't understand why they think this relationship is going to be anything that we care about, but I guess that's too meta a question for seasons 9 and 10. So
yeah. And I mean, I don't know if they are also trying to impress us with remembering something that happened like 3 episodes ago when Donna was going to teach him how to dance for his grandparents' anniversary or whatever the fuck. But like, whatever. So dumb.
Yeah, exactly.
Gina announces that she's going with David, but she also like clears her throat so that we know, okay, this is another extremely low stakes scam she's running. But her wheels start turning when she hears that Kelly is not taking Dylan. So let's put a pin in that. Also, we all know Dylan of ever, but especially Dylan of season 9 would absolutely be involved in the dance marathon. Not. So everything's going great at the Beat, where Steve's next proposed cover story involves Madonna's chiropractor's nudes. Matt warns him that they will get sued if they run it, but Steve doesn't want to kill it because he spent $2,000 on the pics on the theory that it'll earn them twice as much in ad sales and, again, subscriptions. But Janet is grossed out to work somewhere that pays for its stories, and Noah parachutes in to ask Steve if the Beat will sponsor the dance marathon, and Steve tells him they're good for 1,000, explaining to Matt that with Hollywood types there, why? Whatever?
No.
Yeah, it'll generate more stories and more sales.
No.
But then it turns out that Noah, for no good reason, thought that Steve was pledging $1,000 an hour. And I guess because David has announced Steve's generosity or the Beats on the stupid radio show, Steve can't just take it back because of integrity. I don't know. So that doesn't stop Janet the next day urging Steve to do exactly that, namely cancel. Steve's response is that it's Christmas. Again, what? Also, he has a plan. They can pick the people who dance for the Beat. So they just need to pick people who won't have the stamina to last the whole 12 hours. Cue the Munces, remember them, but whoops, the Munces are actually in great shape and are working with a trainer. And this seems to be like resting on the idea of like Munce from their college days as being like, you know, a fat idiot. But like, there's nothing wrong with his wife. Nothing about her would make you think that she's weak.
Anyway. And also, what are the rules?
Exactly. Exactly. I don't get it either. So with
I don't really want to get it because it'll just be stupid and it won't work. It's probably better this way, but ugh. Right.
So with the marathon about to start, Steve tells the Munces to quit if they get too tired, but they both assure him that they will do him proud. And then, as Sarah mentioned, the good old Brian Setzer Orchestra is playing because we're a year past Swingers and the show has its finger on the pulse. But it eats up screen time, so I'm not mad about it. But the Munces are killing it so hard that Steve has to try and sabotage them with extremely alcoholic drinks. And then, eventually, David announces the winners of $5,000 are Dancing for the Beat, the Munces. Okay, this is a prize they could get to keep, because Munce then says they're going to donate it to the fundraiser.
Yeah.
What kind of fundraiser is this? Like, their prize, if there is any, should be like a plant. Like $5,000
for like a gift subscription to the Beat.
Right.
Not that anyone would want that.
God, no. But- Second prize to subscriptions. Yeah.
But
whatever. So dumb. Then it turns out Steve was right. Advertisers were very impressed by the Beat's altruism. Janet sold double the amount of ad space she normally does that time of year. This is really dumb. The end. But first, before we move on to our B plot, a word from our sponsor, Act B Conquer.
Do you need to find your voice, speak up for yourself, take up space, and own your shit? Nikki Neagle can help at actbconquer.com. Nikki is an empowerment coach who challenges people to stop apologizing for who they are, what they do, and how they feel. If you've got an important interview or big presentation coming up, or just want to get more comfortable expressing yourself clearly without minimizing or up-talking, Nikki can help.
Nikki is available for coaching one-on-one, in groups, or in the corporate space. She's worked with Leo Burnett, the AIDS Foundation of Chicago, and the Illinois Women's Press Association, among others. And you can find a complete menu of services and a list of her clients at actbconquer.com.
And because Nikki stands with your hosts in finding the baby voicing on Beverly Hills 90210 Super Grading, we've put together a list of 5 verbal or elocutionary tics Nikki could work with the gangsters to help eliminate.
Number 1. Nikki could help Brandon transition from braying to active listening and could help his classmates and colleagues rehearse productive responses to his privileged foolishness or just work with them on ignoring him.
Number 2, she could eliminate baby voicing and pouting from Kelly's personal and professional interactions without being a bitch about it.
Number 3, she could leave David toward an understanding that the correct posture his current XXXL fashions weigh him down too far to permit is actually critical for better breath control on the mic and superior musicianship overall.
Number 4, she could furnish Noah with some handy mnemonics for remembering how to pronounce the names of canonical European authors. I mean, there's also the matter of his monotone, but Rome wasn't coached in a day.
Number five, finally, she could take on the scourge of heeing and emerge victorious.
Also, not for nothing, but Nikki has a really cool hair color narrative, and you can check that out along with all the services she offers, plus a questionnaire that'll get you a free session at actbeconquer.com. That's actbeconquer.com, and you will find that link in our show notes.
On to the B plot, Sonya and the pink ladies fuck with Donna's money. So there's a new security guard at the Now Wear This Plaza because a jewelry store there got robbed, for which Gina blames Sonya and co. And when Donna opens the store that morning, she finds piles of clothes strewn about and Sonya asleep on the floor with a dude because they had nowhere else to go. Hilariously, the dude takes off running, does not even get a line. He just like puts it out there with no shirt on even.
Oh, Merry Christmas. Yeah.
I guess that Donna gave Sonya a pity job, but why does Sonya have keys to the store? I would like to know. Whatever.
God.
So when she's pulled herself together for the workday, Donna makes Sonya promise nothing like that will ever happen again, which Sonya does. And then Donna exposits that Sonya has one more week before she's worked off what she owes her for the dress. And then Sonya's gang sister, Lucy, who, by the way, is played by Lauren Hodges from Rubicon and the Law and Order episode where Molly Price kills her son because she thinks he's a sociopath.
Well, and also possibly from the It Is Oi Potato Lad Chronicles, because there's like an Irish brogue happening in her threatening that's very weird.
Yes. So anyway, she comes in and yells at Sonya about Tony, on whom Lucy apparently declared dibs, and then pulls out a switchblade to make her point, because apparently switchblades are an inescapable season 9 motif. Dylan also had one, as you'll recall. Sarah, look, you want to comment on this? You mentioned this in your visual aids.
Yeah, just that, like, she holds it aloft in this way that's very, like, when you're a jet all the way, and right. Then it is, like, speaking in this very, Teresa Murphy accent that's like, I don't understand anything about what's happening here except the layered chokers that she's wearing, which locate us firmly in the late 90s.
Indeed. So while this is happening, Donna and Gina just like stand there and make faces at it, while a couple of customers also notice and take off, obviously without buying anything. And belatedly, Stuart, the security guard, comes in to act hard at Lucy. And Lucy puts the knife away and leaves, and Donna makes a sad face. And then Gina tells Noah about the knife incident, and he goes storming in to be inappropriately mad at Donna about it in clip two.
Gina told me what happened. You okay?
Yeah, it wasn't that bad.
Wasn't that bad? This girl pull a knife or not?
This girl didn't do anything wrong. She's the one that had a knife pulled on her.
20% of what you make in a year, you make this week. You can't afford this. Sonya, listen, she's way too nice to say it, so I'm going to say it for her. You should go.
Noah.
Now, she did you a favor here. I think it's your turn.
You don't have to go, okay? But I should. Thanks for everything.
I'm sorry. I think maybe this is better for everyone involved.
Yeah. Everyone but her.
I don't know why Sonya would fight it. Like, oh, I don't have to work off your ugly dress anymore. Bye. Like, this works out well for her.
I really don't. And I mean, let's take a moment to appreciate, in the spirit of Christmas, the horrified extra faces that are happening in the background after
Lucy pulls
the knife.
Yeah, you can see these in the visual aids. Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
So then Noah has to come back the next day with a peace offering rose and an apology about how hard he came down on Donna about Sonya the day before. And right on cue, Sonya comes running in to say that Lucy is pregnant with Tony's baby and Donna is in way, way over her head. Clip three.
He was my only ticket out.
Forget about Tony.
I wanted to get pregnant with him so I could get out of the gang.
Oh, you know, you'll figure something out. You will.
Everything okay?
Yeah, we're fine, thanks. Look, you still owe me a week of work.
Donna,
I'm sorry. There was no place else to go.
going to be okay. Why don't you go outside, get a cup of coffee, relax, and you can start.
Okay.
Okay. So. I'm doing this.
She said it's cool. Thank you.
The piano. Joy to the world, but oh. Not Sonya.
Man.
Who cares? Oh, God. And then they have a couple of, you'll see this in the visual aids too, but they have a couple of cutaway shots to Sonya, like just bathed in glycerin. Like,
oh, yeah.
I think someone aimed a full spray bottle of it at her face from like 2 inches away. This actor is not good.
Oh no, she's not. But neither is this plot line. And like,
oh,
it's like the cutting plot line all over again. Like, figure out which character should get which stories. Donna's not the social worker or even the person who's like social work adjacent. Like, Kelly, get involved in this and call your, you know, contacts, call Mrs. X Les Moonves and get someone who knows what they're doing to intervene here. Cause yikes.
Yeah.
You know, Donna's like, you'll be okay. Don't worry about him. Like, listen to what she is telling you.
You'll find someone else to knock you up. Just get a cup of coffee, splash some water on your face, and then you can start working again.
Yeah.
For free. Even though your friend totally knows where you work and is just going to come in here with, I guess, a rocket launcher next time. Like,
seriously.
What the fuck is even, why do we care? Let's move on.
I don't know. Well, from here, the plot line gets inextricable from the A plot. So stand by, because first we have a message for a different Sarah.
This Sarah and her husband, Todd, have been listening to the podcast since they first got married. Truly a solid foundation for a lasting relationship.
And Todd's Sarah is also different from ours in that on September 14th, she gave birth to their first baby. Welcome to the world, Abigail. You can start listening to us in about 2032 and not a minute before.
To celebrate Abigail's arrival, Todd asked us to list 5 ways this newborn infant is more mature than various members of the gang.
We've never met Abigail, and yet this is the easiest assignment we've ever had.
It really is. Number 1, Abigail can respect the power and usefulness of a motor vehicle without mistaking it for a loved one, which puts her ahead of Dylan.
Number 2, Abigail isn't under the mistaken impression that she knows anything about getting a survivor of domestic abuse away from her partner, and thus, unlike Kelly, wouldn't try that shit.
Number 3, unlike David, Abigail doesn't choose to inflict her vocal complaints upon the general public by broadcasting them on the radio.
Number 4, when Abigail drinks milk and gets dozy, she understands her physical limitations and goes to sleep instead of trying to drive anywhere, Noah.
And number 5, not even a literal baby is as big a baby as Donna.
We're thrilled to hear about this representative of a whole new generation of Again With This fans. So on behalf of Todd and all of us here, welcome to the world,
Abigail!
And now for the A plot. Gina's lust for Dylan almost keeps her from ruining Donna's birthday. So Dylan is loitering outside the store early in the morning trying to take Kelly for Huevos Rancheros. She says she has to work, but Donna tells her to go. She and Gina can handle a Christmas rush. They wish.
I just like to break in and say on John Ramos's behalf, that was, yes, Mom, you idiot. Huevos Rancheros never gets old.
So Gina tries to guilt Kelly into staying in order to keep Kelly and Dylan apart and offers to go to breakfast with him instead. But Kelly has already transferred her hatred of Val to being hatred of Gina and says she'll go. Gina's not the best, but I do enjoy her lack of reverence for Kelly as she crabs that Kelly should be more grateful that Gina is doing her a favor by working in the store. And you know what? She's right. Do we even know if Gina gets paid to like loiter around there?
And what does Kelly even do?
Yeah,
except make bitch faces at people and stack file folders. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So Dylan brings Kelly to that one private airport that looks like a car rental agency. Sarah cut a gorgeous picture of the incredibly late 70s sign. Yes.
Which soon will be taken down so that it can be renamed the Burt Reynolds Memorial Airport, as it should be, because yes, it's very 70s.
It is. He wants to take her for authentic Huevos Rancheros in Mexico, and apparently the writers had a few Brandon lines they didn't get to give him before he left the show. Clip 5.
Cabo San Lucas Cabo, Mexico.
That's right, Bob. Tell her what she's won.
Seldom dumb. Right and wrong again.
Yep. So she just giggles and rolls with it. I don't know how, it's not clear what stage of Dylan's finances we're at. Like, he doesn't have enough money to get his own place, has to stay with David, but he does have enough to charter private planes. Spoiler, multiple times in the same episode.
Okay. I don't know. Also, based on what we knew, like, yeah. Unless he already has invested in Bitcoin somehow, like, mm-hmm. he got his money back, but
right.
only like half of it.
Right.
And that was like 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And London is not cheap to live in.
No.
So, yeah, no one knows how money works. Anyway, moving on.
So at the store, Gina gets back to fucking with Donna by asking what Noah's doing for her birthday. And Donna stammers that she doesn't know since he's busy and excuses him for forgetting about her birthday since it's on Christmas, as we know. At brunch, Kelly's being very boring, just repeating that she can't believe they're in Mexico, which Dylan pretends to find charming. We also find out he's on a first name basis with the waiters and assures Kelly that the water is safe to drink. And then she asks why she's there. And he turns it into a conversation about where they stand relationship-wise. But when he brings up Matt, she makes a face and he decides he would rather have fun than talk, which means taking her to a very folksy, very fake market where they get their photo taken with a donkey. They buy sombreros. One guy selling pottery addresses Dylan by name and gives him a particular sculpture of a fertility goddess, which Dylan buys for Kelly. And then goes elsewhere to buy a very small amount of drugs. Do you want to talk a little bit, Sarah, since you cut a picture of him, about this super under the radar drug merchant?
He is attired entirely in shades of purple.
Yep.
Not like grayish purple, not like lilac, purple. And he comes just sort of like rolling out of his little open air drug pop up and greets Dylan happily and is an overall very proud drug dealer. And it's weird. And I don't get it.
I would also like to note, I certainly don't claim to be an expert in drug smuggling, but the amount of drugs that he buys is tiny. Like, you know, it looks like a serving. It easily fits in his hand. Like, it's a tiny amount of drugs to go all the way to Mexico for in a private plane.
Yeah. I mean, and also to buy a whole sculpture and then be like, keep the change. Like, for yeah. that amount of drugs, just put it in your butt, dude.
Right. Right. Seriously.
Swallow. I know you have kind of a narrow butt, but still, it'll fit up there.
So when he rejoins Kelly, he gives her a horchata and sneaks the drugs inside the sculpture when she's not looking. And she asks about the customs situation. He says they don't have to declare religious artifacts. That cannot possibly be true, but whatever.
Yeah, really.
Anyway, back in LA, it turns out Noah's planning a surprise party for Donna, who has no idea. Kelly doesn't get home until after dark because she's a bad business partner. She comes into the apartment with Dylan, still cracking up about the customs agent who asked if she had anything to declare, which was at least 40 minutes ago, based on how long it would take them to drive from wherever they were. And Dylan then pounces on her face and she enthusiastically kisses him back until the phone rings and she hears Matt on the machine. And while she's picking up, Dylan retrieves the tiny amount of drugs from her sculpture. Kelly breathlessly lies to Matt by omission about where she was all day and assures him that they're still on for the dance marathon while Dylan kisses on her because it's so hot how she lied to Matt. And she gets all flustered about it and wants to talk because she really cares about Matt. And Dylan's like, yeah, you're here with me. And Kelly, with her lipstick all kissed off, insists that she really truly does care about Matt. And Dylan thinks he's got a killer exit line in clip six.
You know when Raul said that this would bring us luck? He lied.
Ooh. Shut up, you flat-headed asshole. Oh, God.
I'll say this for Jenny Garth. She does do the, like, bleary-eyed, lusty, but trying to keep it together thing. She can sell that.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, as much as, like you said earlier, we don't think that she likes anything, I am convinced that she's horny for Dylan.
Yeah, I'm convinced by that. For Matt, not at all. We'll get into that. But she is doing this. She's developed like a David level blocking problem that I will give her credit. It has taken me 8.5 seasons to really notice that she does this. But someone will start kissing her and she does like teeny cat butt mouth.
Right.
Like a bee removing pollen from a flower kissing thing.
Yeah.
And then her hands will kind of like float up next to his face. Like you really see it in the Brandon and Kelly fuck after the wedding that didn't happen thing because she had cake all over her hands in that case. But now she just does it all the time.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't even know where to put my hands. I'm so turned on. Like, really?
Yeah.
pick a place, shoulder, side of his face, anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Stop with the fan dance. Anyway.
So Kelly's just shown up to work to tell Gina that she is blowing off work for a second consecutive day when Matt comes in and Kelly is overly enthusiastic, saying she's so happy to see him. And Gina knows an opening when she hears one. Clip 7.
So how long did it take to get to Mexico? A couple hours? Oh, hi, Matt.
You were in Mexico?
It was just a day trip. No big deal. Were you in court?
Just got back. So, Mexico. When'd you go?
Yesterday, actually. With Dylan.
Dylan. I see.
It was nothing. We just...
Yeah, listen, I got a lot of work to do up in my office, so...
Matt! I guess you didn't leave him a message, huh? No.
I mean, this looks so good on Kelly. Not it least does. Because she's like, Matt! Like, being such a bitch to him.
Mm-hmm.
Why he continues hanging around, I really don't know, especially with her hair and the state it's in this episode, but he's not going to peel himself off the floor, so.
Yes. So Gina comes by David's pretending to look for him, but obviously actually looking for Dylan, who is day drunk enough to invite her in, whereupon she starts interrogating him about his trip to Mexico as if they remotely have that kind of relationship. And Dylan doesn't even pretend to take her questions seriously. But also, apparently, Donna's surprise party overlaps with the dance marathon. Because, of course, Noah would build himself an escape hatch from a 12-hour event at an establishment he owns. Whatever. Gina wants to know if Dylan's going to the party or if he's going to the dance marathon with someone. But he reminds her that she's going to the marathon with David because he heard her say it to Donna and Kelly at the plaza. And David comes back in the middle of this and Dylan puts Gina on blast because apparently she didn't actually ask David to go before announcing to the public that he was her date. Obviously, David's going to be DJing. This is all dumb. Moving on. Kelly finds Matt at the Peach Pit and is lamely trying to explain away the Mexico trip when Dylan himself comes in behind her and Matt does the first cool thing he's done since he came on the show. Clip 8.
Did you make that coffee to go, please?
Is something I said?
Just so we're clear. I'm not going to play backup. I'm not going to compete with trust funds. And as for Mexico, Mexico my ass. The only Mexico I've been to is a stupid drive through at Tommy's Taco. And you know what? The 99-cent burrito over there does me just fine.
I mean, it won't last, but good for Matt.
Yeah. Also, so, I'm not sure what that A-O accent is. He's like basically pulling a Dylan, but sure. Uh-huh. Stick also, the landing, Matt. Nah.
Please pay more than 99 cents for a burrito for me, for the sake of your bowels, please. I remember when we first moved to L.A. In around this time in the 1990s, there was, I forget which of the chains had tacos for 39 cents. That the cheese was like a cheese slice, like a slice of American cheese.
Oh,
whatever is in a 39 cent taco. It's not enough or food. Anyway, Matt leaves with his to-go coffee and Kelly wearily tells Dylan she can't do this right now and leaves also. And Dylan then sees that Gina's there preening at all the drama and guesses she wants to know what happened in Mexico. Good guess, since she already asked in a previous scene when he was drunk. She assumes that Dylan got dumped. He says he moved on. She calls that good spin doctoring and asks what he's moving on to. And suddenly, out of nowhere, he's interested in Gina and asks her to dinner. And she says she just ate. And he gives her the very enticing offer of watching him eat, but whatever. They arrange for him to pick her up at the store at 8, even though they were supposed to stay open until 9 for the holidays. She doesn't have a food preference, but she does like to fly, and she is in luck, because so does he. And then shows up late for work the next morning in her outfit from the day before to see that the store got robbed. And this is where Kelly and Donna find out that Gina left early while the rest of the plaza was still open, and also that Gina's not totally sure she remembered to lock up. And Kelly also notices that Gina's holding the same fertility goddess that Dylan had bought for Kelly. And he tells the cops he was with Gina and he saw her lock up, and his joke about the Lompoc escapees loitering in the courtyard even makes the detective smirk. But Kelly can barely wait her turn to be a bitch about it in clip 9.
Does it bother you at all that he just pulled the same routine on me?
No, actually it doesn't. Does it bother Matt? Oh, or did you come up with another way to explain your sudden interest in Indian sculpture?
Okay, Miss Kincaid. I'd like you and your friend to come downtown with me to look at some mugshots.
I take it we're finished. Thank you.
Whatever.
This is Law and Order level, like, pay attention to the police officer who's questioning you and put your own personal drama on hold. Like, I know it's not unloading shit from a truck, as usually happens on Law and Order when people are getting questioned, but still, like, deal with the detective first, you fucking idiots.
Well, and also, Kelly, aren't you a co-owner of the store? Why weren't you there?
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Anyway, when she's gone, Gina pins the robbery on Sonia, since she also had a key, again, for no reason, and plops the statue at the register where Dylan has to leave it for now. And when Kelly blows off work again, Matt is just loitering in the parking lot. She tells him nothing happened in Mexico, she's not taking any more day trips with Dylan, and she wants to start seeing Matt again. And he basically tells her not to make promises she can't keep. But she tells him he doesn't have to try to compete with Dylan, and asks him again to go to the marathon with her. And he warns her about injury given his shitty dancing, but agrees. And everything is set for Donna's party at the Peach Pit. Where else? At 11:55 again, while the dance marathon, not so much a marathon, is going on. So Dylan's loitering outside the store while the detective is inside talking to Stuart, the security guard. Dylan is very obviously anxiously eyeing the statue full of whatever drug it is, except not full, because again, it's like a tiny sachet. It's like a desiccant size, or an anti-desiccant packet sized amount
found
of drug.
In a shoe, which again, if you just put it in your butt, you'd be riding high right now, as it were. And yeah. Also, why don't you try to be a little more obvious? Like, he is, you know, the lurking like guy in a trench coat silhouette on the old school neighborhood watch signs. He's that, except sweatier.
Yep. And later he watches Stuart leave and lock the door. And at the club, Donna is swaying on the dance floor with Noah and feeling guilty about diming out Sonia to the cops when she wasn't actually sure she robbed the store. And then further spins out about everything wrong in her life, like how Noah's so busy with his successful ? Business that he doesn't have time for her or her dumb birthday, even as she realizes this is frivolous. And he suggests they go next door to talk about it. She's still babbling about it, how it's not a big deal that he forgot her birthday, but it still makes her sad. And then clip 10.
Surprise!
You were saying?
Oh, how much I love you.
Oh, my God. It was like my notes read Heeng Valanche. And
yeah.
I will also note, I didn't pull this for the visual aids. Maybe you did, Tara. But
yeah.
Nat, like, wheels in her stupid baby cake, mm-hmm. Stage right. And he's, like, wearing all black, I guess, to go with the, like, swingers vibe. Like, he's wearing something Tony Soprano would wear, but the look on his face, Joe E. Data is so disgusted by his own life. He's just like, like, I couldn't get a shot of it, but know that it happened and that Nat is aware that he needs to get out.
So everyone's gotten temporarily excused for Donna's birthday party. This dance marathon really has a lot of loopholes. Whatever. Why do I still care? I really do. As Sarah said, Nat wheels out Donna's cake and she blows out the candles. And Gina's hanging back when Noah grabs her and pulls her into the back for a performance review in clip 11.
I know how hard you've worked, but I gotta tell you, I'm disappointed.
What's wrong?
Donna's allergic to chocolate. That's what's wrong.
Yeah, well, I told the caterer 10 times, so...
Ash can't eat her own cake.
You know what, Noah? I don't exist on this earth to serve your precious Donna, okay? I mean, do you have any idea what it's been like for me? Donna this, Donna that, my whole entire life. I'm a little sick of it, okay?
Donna's in the doorway.
I didn't know you hated me so much.
How could I possibly hate you, Donna, after all the Martins have done for me, you know, hand-me-down clothes, helping me out with rent all the time? I mean, besides the fact that no one's ever had a birthday party for me, it's been really great eating your crumbs and your leftovers for the past 24 years. It's been amazing.
Sorry, Donna.
This is, like, sabotaging the cake is so low stakes. Come on, Gina, you're better than this.
Well, and I'm not convinced that she did, because you know when is the first time that any of us has heard that she's allergic to chocolate? Now.
True. Very true. Yeah, it's never come up again.
I will also say Vanessa Marsil's acting is usually, like, it's adequate to the job, which is to say a C minus, because 90210.
Sure.
But she's pretty good here.
Yeah, I agree. And also to Noah. Fuck you, dude. She did all this for free. Take care of the cake yourself if you're that fucking worried about it. Like, yeah. Also, it's a surprise party. Maybe have it even further away from Christmas so it's more of a surprise and not the same night as an event at your, quote, successful, unquote, business. So that
also,
you can plan the
also,
party yourself.
You're in the peach pit. Get her a fucking pie and stick a candle in it.
Yeah.
Do we have to do everything? I guess we do.
Get her a scoop of ice cream with popcorn on it. That's her favorite snack. That's right. I remember season one.
Yeah. Also, she was eating chocolate fucking ice cream in that scene. Hi.
Was she?
Yeah, she
was. That was vanilla. All right.
No, it was chocolate.
Nice. So Dylan's all sweaty finding Kelly at the Peach Pit after dark so that she can let him into the store. She guesses what he wants to retrieve is Gina's sculpture, but not why. And Matt watches the drama and commiserates with another abandoned dancer on the floor. But meanwhile, Kelly's jealously telling Dylan that he ruined whatever could have maybe possibly started between them because of how he's now sniffing around Gina. And when she turns back, Matt is dancing with this other broad and suddenly he's an awesome dancer. Like, what was the point of any of this? Who cares? Dylan is all wild-eyed and squirrely when he finds Gina getting drunk. And she tries to flirt fight about his not having called her since they got back from Mexico, but he cuts straight to needing the sculpture for luck. And then anything could happen, he quasi promises, and Gina is game. So after the dance marathon, Nat tells Donna there's someone in the parking lot looking for her, and yet doesn't mention that it's a teenage girl who's had the shit kicked out of her, because of course it's Sonia. The other girls beat her up because they wanted her to rob the store, which she claims she didn't. Stuart did. And Sonia's out of the gang.
Stuart?
Stuart.
Stuart.
Yeah, I forgot about the other Stuart god.
Phyllis.
Phyllis. And Sonia's out of the gang thanks to Donna, because I guess she got jumped out. I don't know.
Because of Christmas Angel? Dumb baby? Miss?
Yeah.
And so Donna never saw her again. Right?
Yeah, Donna refuses the credit and hugs Sonia and doesn't even whine at her for forgetting Donna's birthday. And Kelly brings Matt to Tommy's Tacos, though it does appear as though she makes him pay. But whatever, everyone has tacos and is happy. And elsewhere, Dylan and Gina have fucked, and he sneaks into the bathroom to snort whatever. I have heroin in my notes, but then in the next episode, it really seems like cocaine, so I don't know. I have no idea.
I think that after the the voluminous list of synonyms that they ran down for heroin. It's like, want some smack, some junk, some horse? Like, okay, we got it. It's heroin. So I think it's supposed to be heroin.
Okay. But then in the next episode, which we will talk about, he does not react in the way that, in my experience, heroin users do after they have heroin.
I don't understand that either. But then she makes a point of asking if he's using needles, which is non-standard
for
cocaine.
Right.
So
it's just weird acting choices or direction or both.
Or meth? I don't know. Could be meth.
I suppose that's true. So then Don is helping Noah clean up after the dance marathon when he presents her with her birthday present, which is he somehow arranged for fake snow to fall on her from the ceiling indoors, and then puts on a Santa hat, which, if it's her birthday, quit crossing the streams. Then he gives her a gift.
Speaking of that, why is David there?
Oh, because he's still on the radio.
Well, but still. Why is David, I guess, is the question.
Yeah, seriously. So then Noah gives Donna a gift, which he presents thusly, clip 12.
My father greets my mother when they first married.
What is with that phrasing, Edith Wharton? What the fuck?
After a lengthy betrothal.
Anyway, it's a very ugly charm bracelet you can see in the visual aids. Of
it's
course she loves
Kierkegaard
it.
Kierkegaard model.
So bad. And Donna tells his poor radio, or sorry, David tells his poor radio listeners that it's 16 hours to Christmas and regardless of the forecast, it's going to be a white one.
Bleah.
Let us close it up by first naming the episode MVP. The Munces, who actually tried.
This is a close one because Gina had a pretty good episode, but I've got to give it to Festive Drug Dealer, who not only is living his monochrome truth, but manages to have it like international clientele that will fly all the way down to Cabo for like
a thimbleful of
a
drugs.
Dash. Yeah. Okay. A pinch.
Yeah. All right, least valuable player. Man, we're really spoiled for choice.
Sonia.
Yeah, Sonia's a good choice. I'm going to say Noah, who saddled Gina with planning the whole party and then bitched at her about how it came off.
Yeah. And right. Also was Edith Wharton. Why?
Exactly. Yeah, how does he even have this family heirloom? Like, why wasn't it seized and sold when his father ran the business into the ground?
Possibly because it looks like it was bent using paper clips and assembled by a Girl Scout troop. No offense, Girl Scout troops.
Indeed. All right, we have a user submitted challenge.
I scored some amazing stones.
Homesick for Texas challenges us to list the top five accessories sold at Now Wear This. She said she'll start, so now we can't use any of these. Cleaver and bedazzler, baby voice modulator, forehead wrinkle cream. I mean, chokers, obviously. It's the late 90s.
How some knitting patterns will give you like a little map, like a grid. Things mm-hmm. like that, but for their super complicated updos and where you like stick in a crochet hook to pull down an anemone lock.
Mm-hmm. Little sticky pads for the inside of your platform shoes that are definitely going to give you blisters because they are not leather.
One of the myriad knockoffs of Vamp. So like Framp.
By Wet n Wild. Totally.
Yes.
Wet
n Wild.
Boy, we're up to four. What's the last one? Late 90s. A thin synthetic fake lamé bolero to go over your slip dress when it gets a little chilly, and that makes five.
Yes.
We also have a Kim challenge.
Bad, and dangerous to me.
Five ways from this episode that Dylan was mad, bad, and dangerous to know. Well, he's mad with his finances, given his loose use of private planes all the time.
It could be dangerous to believe that the water is okay to drink.
It could be dangerous to think that religious artifacts aren't subject to customs inspection.
It could be bad to know him because he's like being all weird and squirrely about the fertility idol and then like sweating on you and acting sketchy.
I mean, it's dangerous to use drugs, whatever drug that may be.
Oh yeah, there's that.
Is that five?
Yeah, I think that's right. Five. And now let's get back to Luke Perry, teen heartthrob. Today's chapter is The Life of a Soap Opera Actor. Getting the part on Loving meant Luke had to move to New York. At first, he was hesitant about living in the huge city, which he moved to from LA, but anyway. But he learned to love it. He found an apartment in the Upper West Side, capitalized incorrectly, and began his acting career. Luke described his soap opera character as a sweet country boy from Tennessee. I've been involved in several fights, as Ned, he said at the time. Then I turn the page, and here's a picture of him wearing a Saugus Speedway trucker hat. And looking like he's mid-bray. And the caption says, Luke admits he wants to do stunt work. Is he doing that in the form of a belch? Because this is a weird picture. Luke goes on to say, America calls Ned the wimp. He's been beaten up 3 times by 5 people. Luke began to take acting seriously. Nice segue. He watched other actors. He learned how to improve himself. He also learned to memorize many pages of script and prepare himself for the daily shootings. This reminds me of my husband, who is also on Loving, and his aunt's invariable comment after a performance, which would be, I can't believe you learned all them lines. Thanks. Aww. Oh, Nikki, love you. Quote, on the soaps, I'd have to memorize 20 pages of dialogue a night, which is a lot to remember, he said. The show Loving's shared studio space with another ABC soap, Ryan's Hope. On the set, Luke met Yasmin Bleeth, who played Ryan Fennelly. The two began spending time together. Luke spent a year on Loving. Although he played only a minor character, he took every opportunity to meet the public. He attended celebrity functions. He signed autographs. He said yes to every publicity offer. He kept running into Ian Ziering, who was also acting in soaps. I don't think I knew that. The two met at various soap events and played softball together. At the same time, Luke took stunt lessons. There are more exciting things out there that I want to do, he said at the time. I want to do stunt work. Presumably as a girl, because he's tiny. And that concludes today's entry from Luke Perry, Teen Heartthrob.
Man.
Next time on Again With This, Gina tries to play Felice and Donna off each other. Kelly tries to play it like she has any chemistry with Matt. And Dylan tries to play like he's hard. Again. Speaking of loads, you should load up on Pepto before visiting our visual aids for this and every other Again With This episode on our website at previously.tv. You can find that website on Twitter at previously.tv, and you can find this very podcast on Twitter at AWT90210. I'm sudden onset chocolate allergy Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is festively attired drug dealer Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. Our producer is threatened body bag David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoonie.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.